We have three bills before us today. The first being House Bill 2294. Council, perhaps you could bring us up to date on the bill and the proposed amendments.
The bill itself increases the witness fees in non-criminal proceedings to $30 a day, and it also increases the mileage. In criminal proceedings, the witness fee remains the same at $5. The amendments, the Dash 1 amendments, define criminal proceedings in a manner that includes all proceedings which would have a fiscal impact on the Indigent Defense Fund, because that was one of the concerns that the committee expressed. Other proceedings is defined in the amendments in order to avoid the necessity of amending 19 other sections of the statute. And basically, that's what this sort of extensive amendment does. The Dash 1 amendments.
Can I just have you checked the file? Does this have a subsequent referral?
Yes, it does.
To Ways and Means?
To Ways and Means.
Okay. Is there discussion I have some.
Oh.
Council, maybe you could respond. This is defined criminal proceeding, and therefore taking that out of the more expensive fee area. What about areas like other state agencies where the agency actually bears the brunt of the increased cost in the civil fee? Department of Revenue, if it calls a witness, or other state agencies involved in litigation?
If the statute that deals with that specific agency, depending on how it refers to the payment of witness fees, there will be an increase. The state or through the agency will be paying the higher witness fee.
Have we identified all of those state agencies?
I don't know. Well, I believe in LC, when they did the draft, they did a computer check, and they, in fact, pulled up all of those references. They're not all set out here. Quite a number of them were taken care of through. Many of them refer, they say, the witness shall be paid the fees and the mileage as provided for witnesses in a civil action or in a civil suit or in a civil case. And the definition on page 1 of the amendments of other proceeding is written to incorporate all of those things. And then some of the amendments do deal, they had different language that had to be amended, and they do deal with specific agencies. For instance, if a legislative committee subpoenas a witness, you're going to have to pay the fees as you would for civil action, which would be the higher fees.
The other proceeding on page 1, what does that refer to?
Well,
under other proceeding, does that mean you pay the higher or the lower?
The higher. It's $5 a day in criminal proceedings.
Plus 8 cents a mile.
And 8 cents a mile. And it's $30 a day and 25 cents a mile in
under
any
this,
other proceeding.
Under this?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we got Department of Revenue. Who else? Did you say they're in this bill?
Some of them are. Not all of them. The Trial Board of the Oregon State Police, Department of Revenue, Tax Court, the Military Justice Section, it's as provided for in civil proceedings. Water Resources Commission, Trade Practices, Antitrust, Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor.
Workers' compensation, probably.
Probably. I can't say with absolute assurance, but.
Can we be increasing workers' compensation costs to the state agencies involved? Should they be calling witnesses?
Yes. And it isn't just state agencies. I mean, there are other, you know, references to other public bodies that would be impacted by this. I don't
cities
have...
Cities and counties.
Right.
And possibly special districts.
I would imagine so.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I would move House Bill 2294 to the full committee.
You want to move the dash one amendments?
Yes, I'll move the dash one amendments.
Representative Bellamy moves the dash one amendments to 2294. Is there further discussion on the dash one amendments? Hearing none. Debbie, we call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Hanlon?
No. Motion is adopted. Representative Bellamy.
To the full committee as amended.
Representative Bellamy moves 2294 as amended to the full committee. And I'll place that motion. Further discussion. The effect would be to move this to the full committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
That's correct.
Hearing none, will you call the roll?
Bellamy?
Aye.
Dix?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Hanlon?
No. Motion fails. Close the work session on 2294 and open it on 3299. This is, as I recall, it's Representative Bunn is the chief sponsor on 3299.
Well, that means an obvious no vote.
And I know that Representative Bunn has been working on some amendments and been working with council on this. Council, can you bring us up to date on on this one?
Okay, Representative Bunn and representatives from CSD have been working on amendments to this bill that have the effect of narrowing the scope of the bill. The amendments, they're not in LC form. It's just proposed amendment to HB 3299 on the top of the bill. The amendments provide that a person giving consent to adoption may agree that the consent shall become irrevocable. The amendments list conditions that have to be met for this irrevocable release to be effective. That's really the bulk of this amendment. It also makes it clear that a child who's subject to the Indian Child Welfare Act, that this doesn't apply in that situation. And there's a further amendment that CSD requested, which requires the clerk of the court to notify CSD of any petitions for leave to adopt which have been pending before the court for more than 6 months, and also to provide CSD with a copy of the court's order of disposition of the petitions.
I am confused. We have a proposed amendment, which is...
Three pages
that doesn't have any signature, so we don't know. Who's that? Whose amendment is that?
This is the one that Representative Bunn and CSD have worked out.
And where's the additional one?
Well, it's all part of the same package. On the third page is the last part that I referred to.
Adding language in sections 3 and 4?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion?
No, I would like counsel to remind us of what it is we're doing again. Maybe I'm just a little slow on it.
Well, under the current law, an adoption can either be through a state or a private agency, a licensed agency, or you can have an individual placement. Now, in an adoption through a licensed agency, there are provisions currently for an irrevocable release of parental rights. In an individual placement, there are no such provisions. And the effect of that is that everything, a child can be released and everything can happen, but up until the moment that the final adoption, the order, is entered, the release can be revoked in the individual placement. And this would, in effect...
As opposed to a CSD placement.
Or a licensed, a private agency
placement. Who has them irrevocable now? And who's going to get them irrevocable after this goes through?
The agencies do now. And this would apply to private, to private adoptions, individual placements.
Okay. And CSD and Representative Bunn's office has worked out proposed amendments to HB 2 or 3299, which are labeled that. You can start out with proposed amendment to HB 3299, delete page 1 lines 13 through 33 and page 2 lines 1 through 10.
Yes.
I'd like to get a sense of the committee on where they're at on this.
I'm fine with the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy indicates he's fine with the amendments. Representatives Miller and Dix. Fine.
I'm fine.
The chair is not fine with the amendments in regard to the irrevocability, although I probably have some difficulties with the irrevocability even now within the CSD process. However, and I apologize, counsel, had I known we did not have these amendments in proper approved LC form, I would not have put this up, but I assume we have a substantive vote on coming of, or at least of the four members of 3-1, and that already shows in the record. We will put this up for work session when, Virginia, when is it we next meet?
We meet on next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, and hopefully it'll be just a matter of a minute or two to get the vote on this and get this out. And in the meantime, if you will notify Representative Bunn to get these in LC form, proper form, approved, then we'll have amendments in proper form to adopt.
I should apologize. I think perhaps this is my fault. I didn't realize that before we would take action on them that they absolutely had to be in LC form. So okay. I might have misled his office in that respect, but I'll take care of that.
That's okay. Procedurally, we will bring it back up. I mean, that's my commitment, and obviously from the record here, we know what the vote is. I've got a pretty good idea, mm-hmm. But we'll bring them in proper form next time we meet. And that should take a very short time. With that, I will close the work session on 3299.
Sure.
Representative Dix.
For the purposes of allowing Representative Bauman, who's away for business in the House, to vote on 2254, having voted on the prevailing side, I serve notice of possible reconsideration on the motion.
So noted. With that, we're going to be at ease for a minute and change counsel and get into House Bill 2324. And just remind everybody that we have session at 3:30 this afternoon.
She only made one mistake.
What?
She could stay.
She only made one mistake.
I'm sorry. This is how it works. Rules are rules.
Yeah. That issue has been driving us crazy. That's been driving me crazy.
Prospects. Dr. Bray, we're back in session and in work session on 2324. Kingsley, I lost you.
Oh,
could you come up to? We have two members of the interim task force. available. Counsel, can you remind the committee what section it was that we were on?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, we had just finished section 15, but I think afterwards you expressed an interest in going back over section 15.
We'll start with section 15, and before I do that, Dr. Gray, somebody was mentioning that you had something to clarify on who did what, and I've forgotten what it was now. There was a question of who performed, who paid for the the doctors in the proceedings that came in, the doctors and mental health professionals, the one, two, or three that are in the bill presently, too. I think that was the question.
So the question is who pays for the examiner and the treating physician for the current hold period?
Correct.
No. Well, I know the answer. No, this is your test.
It's the counties.
The counties now pay for that. Okay. But Dr. Bray, for the record, would you introduce yourself? And Kingsley, would you introduce yourself also in the function that you're using while appearing here, or the title?
For the record, I'm Kingsley Click. I work for the State Court Administrator's Office, and I represented the Judicial Department on the Mental Health Task Force that the bill is a product of.
And I'm Don Boy, Assistant Administrator of the Mental Health Division for Programs for the Mentally and Emotionally Disturbed, and I was chairperson of the task force, interim task force on civil commitment.
I note that we have before us a House Bill 2324 that shows itself annotated by mental health.
The reason for that was that in reorganizing the bill to make it clearer, sections were moved so that all of the parts were brought together. And it's difficult in that way it's drafted always to see what is the operative, what's changed. And the yellow highlighting is designed to do that.
And we were plodding through, and I think we'd reached at least enough of a consensus in this committee to draft the proper amendments through and including section 14. Counsel, why are you running away now?
I need my notebook.
Oh. So that we're going to proceed to section 15. And Dr. Bray, maybe you want to explain the annotation. I do recall that was what we ended up, we last spoke about, but let's go back over 15.
Section 15 deals with examiners. The first part that's removed is simply been moved separately. The first change is on the top of page 13, in which only one examiner is required instead of two examiners. And so that's one of the first changes. The reason for that change, again, was that the current process of examination is often in the courtroom and is a rather cursory examination. And the intent of the task force, the problem the task force was trying to solve here was to get a more thoroughgoing examination.
Dr. Bray, before you do that, the first section was just deleted. It wasn't moved anywhere, was it? Page 12, lines 34 to the end. That's just what you're replacing here, I believe.
Yes. Okay. They're right. This section also provides that the examination process be initiated prior to the hearing, and that means that it can be conducted at the place of where the patient's being held, and that the examiner would have access to the record. Toward the end, it outlines what the report shall contain and gives the division responsibility to adopt the contents of the report in rule. At the top of page 14, it provides access.
Well, hang on a minute. You're now in section 16.
I'm still. Oh, excuse me. All right, yeah.
Let's take these one at a time.
Right.
And I think the decision point here the prior to the hearing examination is contained in section 16 at lines 29 through 31. Am I correct? The authority prior to the hearing. So we're still on section 16. Members of the committee, I think some of the things brought up was, weren't we going to possibly add costs because we were going to have a third examiner in every case, and due to the practicalities of the hearing, there would almost never be a case where you'd only have one examiner. Comments? The chair would be interested in moving back to the old two examiner system rather than going to the 1, 2, and 3. And I'd like to see whether or not there's any support for doing that on this committee. Let me remind, I realize we're going back over this, but the practicalities are the judge shall appoint one examiner in all cases, and if requested, the judge shall appoint one additional qualified examiner who is designated by the requesting party, most likely the person to be committed. And I recall the conversation, I cannot foresee a situation where that would not occur. And I don't know whether you wanted to speak to that or not. I know that, I think you did earlier, too.
From the testimony the task force received and the discussion during the task force, it was anticipated that, in fact, in many instances, there would just be one examiner, and that would be satisfactory, and that the savings from having two could then be utilized to give that examiner more time to do a more thoroughgoing examination. The addition of the language to provide the other examiners was to assure that the patient could ask for it if desired, but we didn't anticipate that that would be the case in most instances.
Let me just ask committee members if they want to comment on that. I just can't imagine. Dr. Bray, let me just ask it this way. If there were a proponent of commitment that were there and the first examiner said there is no mental illness or any basis to commit this person, would not that the party promoting the commitment then ask for a number two examiner? Almost as an automatic.
I think impressed the task force was the difference in the way these hearings are carried out, and in some counties they were very informal, and if it became obvious to everybody there that they had found an alternative for the person other than commitment, that generally everybody would agree to that, and that would happen, and that happens in some instances now. So I could think of some instances where they could decide on a release plan for the person, and the proponent for commitment might well say that is all right.
Yeah. Kingsley, did you have a comment on that?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. Under the current bill, the second examiner could only be requested by the allegedly mentally ill person or that person's attorney. There's no provision where it could be requested by the state. So there.
I see that. Okay, okay. Then I'm corrected there. I still am not convinced that you won't always have two examiners, or that the case will never be brought or never get that far.
Yeah, I would agree with the chair, but I'm speaking right now as the judicial department. Under the present system, there are two examiners, and they're both appointed by the court. The first one's automatically appointed, and then if the allegedly mentally ill person wants a second one, they can request it. But if they request it, the court appoints that second physician, and the list that they use is one that I understand is people certified by the mental health division. Under the proposed bill, the situation varies, and I think would encourage a situation where if the first examiner recommended commitment, that there would be a second examiner, because the second examiner is one who's designated by the allegedly mentally ill person or by the defense counsel. So they would have a right that they don't have now to get their own physician. And, you know, certainly it's open to debate whether they would use the system more than they do now. I think the current practice is there are not a lot of second opinions, but I'm not sure that wouldn't change.
Counsel, sure.
Kingsley, if the first psychiatrist came back and recommended commitment, and the alleged mentally ill person requested that his own psychiatrist to be appointed, and let's assume that he appointed one who found him not or that he should not be committed, don't you think that the judge would ask that a third psychiatrist be appointed rather than relying on the first two opinions?
Mr. Chair, legal counsel, I think that's likely, unless the judge felt that he or she had sufficient information with the record plus the reports in the two examinations. But I think it would be likely.
Thank you.
I just wonder whether we're buying ourselves more costs under this provision and whether more examiners, whether or not. There obviously will be more costs if the examiners are involved at an earlier stage.
But that was, the intent was to get less cost. So if it works out the other way, the intent was to, in most cases, trade one good examination for two more superficial examinations. If it works out, if it doesn't work out that way, I think that will not have worked.
Mm-hmm. Committee members? Comments?
Representative Miller?
Well, Mr. Chairman, yeah, I'm inclined to side with the task force, and since, if I understand it right, Dr. Bray thinks there would only be one examination, it doesn't foreclose the opportunity for more. The current language doesn't. I don't know what we're necessarily gaining by guaranteeing more examinations. I think you feel that there will be more than one, but if there's an opportunity to have less than one and the system can work that way, I guess I'd certainly be in favor of allowing it.
Let me put it this way. I'd say in all cases where there are two, there's a high likelihood that under this proposal there will then be three. And maybe the task force didn't consider that as a potential fiscal implication. Kingsley?
Mr. Chair, my recollection of what the task force grappled a long time with is the ill they were trying to address was the fact that the two examinations now tend to take place only in the courtroom. There's not a pre-hearing examination. They felt for the examinations to really be valid that a physician needed to look at and speak to the person and see the records and things ahead of time. And they realized that that would increase costs. And what they were hoping to do was they were trying to balance a lot of interests on the committee. and they felt that if there was one good exam plus the additional medical testimony and records that would be admissible under the bill, that perhaps the judge would have sufficient information and the other side would feel that there was sufficient information presented that it could go at that. What may happen if you're being an advocate for the other side is, despite all evidence, maybe you would like some contrary point of view, and that certainly would be available under this, and then I think likely there would be a third. But I'm just presenting what the task force did look at and was trying to balance a lot of interests and costs.
Well, if there would be an advocate isn't even a question. Isn't this an advocacy system where the lawyer appointed doesn't have any duty
but to the client,
but to be an advocate, if they're following the ethics of their profession?
Mr. Chair, I believe that would be my...
What about, let me ask the two of you and then the committee, what would be wrong then with saying one or two and forgetting about the third under these provisions? What would be wrong with doing that as a way of cutting down?